Disclaimer. This podcast is my own, and the views expressed by me and my guests on this podcast do not reflect the opinions of PSA Collectors or any other company that engages me for appraisal services. Neither myself nor my guests provide any financial or investment advice on this podcast, and any discussions of valuations for collectibles, either in the past or the present, does not guarantee future performance. Enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of the Sports Appraiser Podcast. Today is going to be a fun one. We are sitting with John, also known as the basketball card guy. And some of you out there have probably seen him at a card show at the National. He lives on the East Coast, so he's out there. He's buying, he's selling, he's trading. But I wanted to talk to him today because not only is he a big-time collector, but he really collects stories. And we're going to talk about some of those in a couple minutes. And I know he's going to show us a couple items and then I'll appraise them. But let's kind of take a step back. First, John, welcome to the pod.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Thanks for being with us today. And everyone knows you as the basketball card guy, but I also kind of know you as John. And so take us back. How long have you been collecting and how did you get started collecting?
Long time. Since I was a kid, probably 8 or 9 years old, my dad had collected baseball cards when he was a kid. One day we were going through the attic. I had a lot of toys up there and there was a box of baseball cards. We opened it up. I'm like, what are these? You know, and so he had everything from he had a mantle from 59. He had one from 63. He had a few hundred cards in there, not in the best of condition. You know, they were literally in a shoebox. But he was one of the lucky ones. His parents didn't throw them all away. There was still a shoebox full of cards left. Started going through them. He had given them to me. My mom was like immediately like, I think these are worth something now. Maybe you shouldn't just play with them. Maybe you should like get a price guide or something. And so that was when I bought my first Beckett and started figuring out what these cards were worth. And it was shortly after that that I discovered they didn't just make cards for baseball anymore. They made cards for basketball. And while I played baseball as a kid, I was on a travel team. My passion, what I enjoyed watching, was basketball. And so I started collecting basketball cards in like 1992, the Shaq year. Everyone was going out getting Shaq rookies. And that was the start of that collection. And then I never stopped. A lot of people kind of stopped and then restarted after COVID. I just never stopped. It was something that's always been relaxing, a side thing I can do to take me out of the stresses of the day. You know, it's just great to sit down and organize, you know, through cards for a few hours. It's just really relaxing. So I've kept it ever since.
That's wonderful. And when I go to your website, I notice that there's things that you're interested in buying. You collect different players, you collect different sets. What is, like, here we are in 2025, what's the top item or player or set you're looking to buy today?
I'm building a couple of sets. So there's a couple of sets from the 90s that I'm still growing out. And my rule of thumb is that I always try and collect the biggest players out of it first to get that done. And then I collect the rest around it. So like the Duncan Go Nuts set from back in the day, that's one I'm still collecting. I already have the Jordan. I already have the Kobe. I've got the largest ones, the biggest price ones out of the set. Vince Carter is the only one that remains in that. That's a higher dollar card. So looking to build those kinds of sets. And there's like four or five of those that I'm still building out right now. Whenever I find them, no rush. I'm never in a rush. But then there are some other sets too that, and just players in general that I'd love to get. I don't have a Jordan Kobe Bryant dual autographed card where they both signed on the card itself. That's something that's on my list that I very much want to get. I don't have a card that's signed by Jordan, Rodman, and Pippen all on the same card. And those three were just so big in my childhood, the three guys I watched the most on those Bulls teams. So things like that I'm always looking for. They don't come up very often. A lot of the stuff that I love is very, very limited. And honestly, a lot of it's just out of my budget today. Like the kinds of things that I've been collecting and looking for the last 20 years and still the things I look for now. And they've just gone up in price so much, it's hard to wrap your head around. But I have a lot of cards, and so I'm more than open to trading. So I could certainly trade up for those cards, but I probably wouldn't purchase them for the prices they sell for today. That's just a very, very valuable stuff.
Yeah, we've all been very lucky and maybe unlucky in the last 5 years since the pandemic, because all of our collections have gone up in value. But if you're looking to buy something, obviously things are 2, 3, 10, 20x as they were in 2019.
Yeah, certainly so.
Yeah. And it's funny how you mentioned Rodman earlier. So this is about 2 years ago. Someone sent me in the mail because they wanted to have, it was a Rodman and maybe Michael Jordan dual card graded, but graded by PSA, but it was already graded by some inferior company that I never heard of. And I was very skeptical.
Yeah.
And once I got the card in the mail, I'm like, yeah, I don't know if this is a forgery or a reprint or I don't
what's it look right.
Yeah. You know, it's something that just, it doesn't look right here. And so obviously this person went from thinking it was going to be worth a lot of money to, you know, it's worth nothing.
It's so hard. And I tell people all the time, and you live this, I know you live this in what you do, but I tell people all the time that when you're getting something authenticated after the fact, it's always an opinion. That's what it is. And you look for the greatest opinion you can find, somebody that's really official on it, that's had the experience, because they're obviously their opinion is worth a lot more than some random company on a slab. But it's still an opinion. And I think a lot of people, they like live and die by getting things authenticated. I know people that have gone out, gotten things signed, and then they get disappointed when it doesn't pass authentication. And I'm like, that doesn't make it inauthentic. It just means that it doesn't look right to the person observing it. Because what do they have to work with? They only have what they can see. They weren't there like you were, you know? So I think people get obsessive over it, right? It's that zone. But you see the other side of it. Like, you've got to authenticate these things too, so.
So let's kind of talk about that for a few seconds here, right? Because the way that an authenticator makes a determination if what you have is authentic or not is they have a database of exemplars or examples of what they know to be authentic based on height and tilt and slant and pen pressure and what's the medium here. So all these different types of things go into a determination. And of course, no one's perfect, right? So unless you saw that person sign that item.
Right. You can't know 100%. Yeah.
You can't know 100%. And you mentioned grading. And I remember years ago watching a podcast you were in. You don't grade really anything for your personal collection, right?
Correct. Yep.
And walk us through what's the reasoning behind that?
Two things mainly. One, I'd rather spend the money on more cards. I mean, that's just simple financials. If I'm not going to sell the cards, then it to me, like, having them raw is just fine. I can enjoy them that way. And then the second part was even like in a protection aspect for me. A lot of people assume that, like, once it gets slabbed by any of the companies, it's well protected forever. But you know as well as I do, like, the UV protection on those cases doesn't last forever. No clear plastic is going to have UV protection that's going to last 50 years, you know, like, and so, like, for me, I always felt like if I could put it in a mag or I could put it in something that was safe in and I could change that out from time to time. I have it stored in a room here that has zero UV light. There's no windows coming in and having the sunlight, and all of the lighting in here is non-UV as well. So the stuff I have on display, the autographs haven't faded in the years I've had them on display. Whereas in some stores that I've gone to and things like that, over the course of 1 year, you can see an autograph fade, even if it's in a slab, you know, or a mag case. So for me, it was just a matter of, like, financially, it doesn't add any value to me. So why pay for that if it's not personally adding any value to the way I see a card? I enjoy the card for the card it is. Seeing a Gem 10 version that's labeled Gem 10 versus a raw version that looks like a 10 to me, no difference. You know, if it's a perfect card, it's a perfect card. And that's why I haven't done it. I understand why other people do it 100%, you know, and it adds a lot of value in the marketplace. The marketplace has changed. 2019, 2020, there's been a huge influx of folks going out there grading cards. And some people will only collect things that are Gem 10s at this point. That's all they want in their collection. And they don't want anything that's an inferior card. And they very much believe in that fact that if somebody else, whether it be PSA or any of the other, you know, graders out there that they respect, if they put that label on, to them, it's worth more money. And I get that. That's a personal thing. Just isn't worth more to me. So.
Sure. One of the things I always tell my clients, and I'm not a client of yours and vice versa, is especially with raw collections, that these items should be kept in acid-free boxes, acid-free paper boxes.
Yep.
That's really important. And also, a lot of times over the years, I see raw collections in these binders with these 9-page plastic pages, right? And a lot of them get very sticky over the decades. And, you know, these things a lot of times are made in China. And over time, gases kind of expand and get into, whether it's a card or an autograph, if you're keeping it in like a Lucite case.
Yeah.
And so to your point, when you're storing your items in a UV protected environment, that's extremely important. But it's not just about that. It's about other ways to protect. And I feel too often in our space, people are talking about, oh, I got a PSA 9 or I got a PSA 10 or I sold this for $500,000, but they're not talking about how they're storing and protecting their cherished items for future generations. And that's so important.
100%. And that grade, when it's given that grade, is the grade it is today, that day that it was graded. I had someone that reached out to me with a Luka Doncic graded rookie card autograph the other day. It happened to be Beckett graded. And on that Beckett grading, it had a autograph grade of a 10. But when I tell you about the other card, it's half faded. Like you can only see half of the autograph. Like it is on its way to being gone. And I said to the person, they sent me the photo. I said, is this just lighting in your photo or did the autograph fade? And they were adamant, like, oh, it hasn't faded. That's how they are. And so I sent them a picture of another example of the same card. And I said, you see how this is bold and blue? And again, is it a photograph you took or maybe is yours not look like? Well, mine doesn't look like that, but that's the way I got it. And it's graded a 10. So it's a 10 autograph. I was like, it was when it was graded, but that's a moment in time. It's not that way anymore. So yeah. Absolutely, to your point, you know.
That's why you have to buy the grade and not, or buy the card, buy the card and not the grade. Yeah. And you'll see at card shows too, people will sell something like that and someone will come by and say, oh my God, retail price on this is $30,000. This guy's asking $20,000. It's a steal. I'm going to buy it for you for $20,000. Well, why? Because what you just explained, that auto has faded and $20,000 may seem like a steal, but maybe that card should only be worth $5,000.
Yeah. And it may disappear entirely. I collect some of the autofocus cards that were done on like thick plastic. And those autographs, when they start going, they don't stop. Like, if you see one faded today, anyone out there that's looking at those cards, if you see some of those cards that have faded autographs, they're probably going to fade to nothing eventually. It just gets to that point. Sometimes it's the material they sign on. Sometimes it's the markers they use. I have a ball signed by Derek Jeter that I got from Arena Club when we were doing something in the National with him about a year and a half ago. And it went from blue to gold. I mean, the chemical reaction between that marker that he used and that ball, very funky, very funky. So, and all of them went that way. You know, my friends that got balls there too, all of them have gone gold. So it's very strange, but you got to watch out for it.
I've seen you at the National with Arena Club, Roadshow cards. What's your, you know, when you go to the National and help out these companies, what are you doing? How are you doing it? I imagine you're there for a full week and barely get any sleep.
Yeah, I barely get any collecting done anymore is the truth. You know, like I used to go to the National just to go around and shop and occasionally trade and do that. And now I'm working with so many folks, as you pointed out, that I'm bouncing around from one place to another. I work in media, so I do video production has been what I've been into for over 20 years at this point, over two decades. And I've gotten pulled in. It's funny, like I had a company that I was working with that got sold to Beckett a few years ago. And then Beckett figured out, wait a minute, you own a video production company. We need someone to do video for our National booth. And so they had this huge booth about 3 years ago in Chicago where we did 20-foot by 10-foot screens. It was very different for Beckett. They had been very old school with their displays before. But this was a real standout at the National a few years ago. Mega screens. And so I had to design all the video that was going on, basically the wallpaper, the moving wallpaper that was happening that made up
that
entire
booth. That was you? I remember
that. That was me. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That was incredible.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was amazing. It was one of those just awesome, awesome experiences. And it stood out at that show. You know, a lot of the corporates hadn't gone that big yet. And now it's like, it just gets bigger and bigger every year, it feels like. And I think Beckett's actually shrunk down more at this point. They did a big one there, but they've been smaller since. But yeah, so that was that's one example there. I've been working with Arena Club. I did their first launch video. So Arena Club, for those folks that aren't familiar with it, it's really a marketplace for cards. That's how it started out. They do their own grading, but their grading isn't really, it wasn't primarily to be a grading company. They never considered themselves a grading company. It was just a way that if you were sending in raw cards to go on their marketplace, they would assign it a numeric grade so people could feel like, oh, okay, I'm not just buying a raw card. Someone's looked at it and given a judgment. And so they use AI along with humans to figure that piece out. One of the reasons that a lot of people know them is because Derek Jeter is a co-owner in it and co-founder. And so I was pulled in early to do some video work for them pre-launch of the company before it blew up. And the day they actually launched it, they invited me to their launch party, which was at Yankee Stadium. It was the first time that Derek Jeter had been back there in a long time, several years. He hadn't been back. And so got to spend several hours with him. You know, he was doing a lot of media and got to stay in the room for that. And then he had a suite that we got to hang out in and watch the game. And then that led to me doing some more video for him and the company when he was doing trades across the country with different shops and things like that. When he was at Fanatics Fest, I was doing behind the scenes video of that. And so just gotten pulled in any of the video projects that have involved him since on that end. Roadshow Cards, I actually came up with that brand name. The brand was born in my office in Connecticut. A lot of people don't realize that. If they're familiar with the Roadshow, it's a Kentucky Roadshow, Texas Roadshow, California Roadshow, and New York Roadshow, four stores across the country. But it started as an online store that I helped them build. It started as an online brand that was Jimmy, who's the founder, Kentucky Basketball Cards on Instagram. A lot of people know him from that. He was going around telling stories through video, meeting up with different store owners across the country, interviewing them on his iPad. He and I didn't know each other at the time. We both followed each other on Instagram. And I reached out and I just said, look, I love what you're doing, but I would love to help you up your game in terms of video production skills. You know, you're using an iPad, you're using it vertically. It's way across on a table over here, so you can't really hear things. You know, I would love to just walk you through it. So we spent 3 hours on the phone, walked him through a whole bunch of tips. And then he said, Jonathan, I got to take you out to dinner for all this help. I'm going to fly up to New York. I want to take you out to dinner. And I was like, well, if you're going to take me out to dinner, then I'm going to take you to YouTube, because I was one of YouTube's very earliest content partners. First 200 when they launched that almost two decades ago now. And so I had rights to the YouTube studios there where I could book a studio anytime I wanted, really. And so I booked a studio, brought Jimmy in. I taught him how to use his iPad and a couple other pieces of equipment that I actually bought for him, some audio equipment, lighting equipment. He then took me to a Knicks game. It was just back and forth, just like, what can we do for each other? And then 3 weeks later, he called me up and said, I want you to, because that was just a video series. He's like, I want you to design the brand. After knowing you now and understanding all these things you've done in your past, I used to work for a consulting firm in media and other things. He's like, I think you're the right person to help me develop this brand. So we sat down in my office in Connecticut. And over the course of 2 days, Jimmy's Kentucky Roadshow was born. And then later, Roadshow Cards. And I did all of the logo design, branding behind all of that stuff that you see with them and continue to manage that for them.
Incredible. So you have the best of both worlds. You have this like great day job that's kind of mingling with sports collectibles, right? I mean,
absolutely.
How lucky are you to be in this position?
I pinch myself every day.
So. You know, in fact, I remember what was it, a month ago, you were, I believe, at the New York Roadshow Cards with Topps and Michael Rubin.
Yeah,
I think it was Hobby Rip Night. So how was Hobby Rip Night this year different from last year?
Wow. So I've been involved with Hobby Rip Night in a lot of really amazing ways the past few years. So not only do I help out Roadshow, I also help out a couple other local shops. I am much more involved with Roadshow on a day-to-day basis than the other shops. But Skybox is another one that I do work with in Norwalk, Connecticut. They used to be right across the street from my office. And so I was in there every day, you know, taking my lunch break, not eating much lunch and just buying singles. And so as they've developed over the years, anytime I can lend a helping hand, I like to help them with video production and other things. So 2 years ago or a year ago as of February, Skybox had planned to do this, their event, instead of in Connecticut, they planned it at City Field. And they had a connection there where they were able to rent a restaurant connected to it. That got bubbled up to Tops. Whoa, they've got a venue at Citi Field. Let's give them a really big athlete. And so they ended up with Tom Brady at their rent night. And I had done all the video on the screens there for them for that night and coordinated some of that stuff. And then shot video there as well. And as luck would have, you know, luck would happen, because it was kind of a bar restaurant, there weren't a ton of kids. And they really wanted to do the traditional thing that you see, you know, kids trading with the athlete. And so my son got to be one of the first trades with Tom Brady. And
oh my God. Wow.
Unbelievable memories for forever. Like, he traded him a Ken Griffey Jr. card, and in exchange, he got a black Gem 10 refractor of Tom Brady from Tom Brady. And so just absolutely unreal. It was just an amazing experience. So that was crazy insane. But this year was just as cool. I mean, Michael Rubin coming to the shop, he came out to Bronxville to the New York Road Show. And I got to say, he spent the time. He was there probably 45, 50 minutes. He was only scheduled for like 20 to 30. But the kids there brought cards they really wanted to trade with him. And they were serious about it. Like,
So some kids would do a trade and he would offer them and they would say no. I saw that.
Yeah, they would. Like, because they knew what they had. And that was what was really cool. There was one kid that he had called up, who had pulled a Jaden Daniels numbered out of 75 that day out of one of the free packs. And so he called the kid up and he was trying to like present things to the kid. And finally we said to the kid, look, if it's okay, if you don't have to feel the pressure, you don't have to take a trade. He really liked Jaden Daniels, so he wanted to keep the card. So he kept the card. I remember sitting there and overhearing someone saying to him, look, this is a cooler story than if you had taken a card. You said no to Michael Rubin. You won the negotiation. You know, like, it was just great, you know. But Michael was such a great sport with all of them. He wanted them to win, you know, and he was not pressury at all, you know, for any of these kids. If he couldn't work out a trade, he couldn't work it out. He signed cards for kids as they were there, like all sorts of random cards. He took photos with everybody. It was just great. It was awesome. And he had a long schedule that day. He was going to four or five locations. I think we were the second. But he really spent the time, and it just showed, like, you know, that's what I love about this industry. It's like, I remember when I was in this as a kid and I dreamt of having a situation like any of these. Couldn't even imagine meeting an athlete like Tom Brady at something like that, or meeting someone like Michael Rubin, like at any of these kinds of things. And to see that folks that are my age now are running the show, and now they're making that stuff happen for the next generation. It's so, so cool to see.
Unbelievable. That's a great, great story. Let's pause there because I know you brought some stuff for me to.
Absolutely. Upgrade.
And I don't exactly know what you have or what order you want to show it to me, but let's start with the first item.
Yeah. So the first item, this is an exquisite box. So this was 2007-08 exquisite. And I don't know how familiar you are with these boxes, but what they did was they had an outer piece, which I still do have the outer piece to this too. They have an outer cardboard shell, and then they were shrink wrapped around that. And so when you purchased a box that was sealed, you couldn't see the top like we can see now. And this one was a special top. There's only a few athletes they did this with, and this is obviously was Kevin Durant's rookie year. He signed 35 of these boxes in gold. They were all numbered to 35 as well. And then the certificate, the matching certificate I still have from Upper Deck inside there, comes with the matching, you know, hologram on there too. I do not have the cards that came in the box, just the box itself. At this point, there were cards that were all signed by Kevin Durant as well. That was part of the deal with the player boxes. But this is just a special thing. I'm a big fan of Durant. You can see his jerseys on my wall back there. I have one of his first shoes back there too. Signed, came out of a locker room. Big collector in Durant stuff. I love that this was full out autograph, you know, the big gold sign. I love that it was limited to his jersey number. I love that he put his jersey number too after the autograph. And that it's from arguably the most sought after set out of any basketball set. Exquisite collection from Upper Deck. So that's the first item right there. It's a neat piece from the collection.
It's very unique. Obviously, there's no cards in there, like you said, but I think at auction, someone would definitely pay between $500 and $1,000 for that empty box, but that signed with Upper Deck Authenticated.
Awesome. So cool. So cool.
What's the second item?
Second item I will show is this. It is a card that has a very detailed story. So I'll walk you through this. So this is a Fleer Focus Tony Parker. Now, they made 999 of these cards. The first 300 of them, they actually went to the post office with in the city in which he debuted. So in this case, San Antonio on the Spurs. The date of his first ever game, October 30th, 2001, they took this card, they stuck a postage stamp on it, and they went to the post office in San Antonio and they had it postmarked, verifying that this card was in fact in San Antonio the day he started in the NBA. Flash forward to 2023, I was at the Hall of Fame for the induction of Tony Parker. And for his induction, I brought this card with me and I had him sign it and inscribe it, HOF 23. But I did one more thing to make this even more interesting. I then took this card and I put a stamp on the back, a Wilt Chamberlain stamp. I thought that would be cool. And I had it postmarked at the Springfield, Massachusetts post office, the date of his Hall of Fame induction, making it a true one of one, not just because he signed it or that it's a cool rookie card, but that it's probably the only item on earth that you could verify that it was with him in the city where he started in the NBA. And then again, on that last pinnacle of his career where he's inducted in the Hall of Fame.
This is a true start to finish, beginning to end moment on a card that, like you said, is yes, a truly unique one of one item. And for the true Tony Parker fan or fans out there, like, this is obviously something they don't have in their collection, that they'll never have in their collection because you
never be made again. Yeah.
It cannot, that's right. But I would still think if you were to put this at auction, it would still generate a few $1,000 because of the rarity, the uniqueness, the story attached to it. Thank you for coming on the pod. Once again, this is John, the basketball card guy. Where can people find you?
BasketballCardGuy.com is my website. You can go there. You can see lots of aspects of my collection. And on Instagram, at BasketballCardGuy, all one word. I try and keep it simple.
This has been great. It's been so much fun. I feel like we could talk for another like 10 hours, and maybe one day we will. And I will see you at the National.
I'll see you then. Thanks again.